A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Anna sent us a question this week, and it's one of those prompts where the more you sit with it, the more layers it has. She's flying to the US, with a stopover in Dubai, one flight on Emirates, one on Fly Dubai, and she noticed something just from the airline websites. Even the base experience looks more polished, more hospitable than what she's used to from American carriers or Al Al. And that observation sent her down a rabbit hole. She wants to know what Emirati culture actually is, underneath the skyscrapers and the luxury branding. What's the food like? How do people dress? Is it anything like Bedouin culture in Israel or something else entirely? And the very practical question, can you get any sense of real local culture from inside Dubai International Airport? Or is it all duty-free and generic food courts? And if not, what should she see on a future trip to actually understand the place?
This is a great question because she's already spotted the central puzzle. Dubai looks like it was designed by a committee of luxury branding consultants, and yet there's a real country underneath with a real culture that's only about 55 years old as a nation state. The UAE was founded in 1971. It's younger than I am.
Most of your sweaters are older than the UAE.
That's probably true, actually. But here's the number that explains almost everything. Emirati citizens are roughly 11% of the population. The other 89% are expatriates. So when you land in Dubai and the person who checks your passport is Filipino, your taxi driver is Pakistani, the hotel staff are from everywhere, and the only locals you see are in the distant background somewhere, that's not an accident. The visible culture is internationalized because the workforce is international. The actual Emirati culture is concentrated in homes, in specific neighborhoods, in government institutions, and in deliberate cultural preservation projects.
So the experience of landing in Dubai and feeling like you're in a globalized nowhere is the intended surface layer. The local character isn't missing. It's just not where a transit passenger would naturally encounter it.
And Hannah's instinct about the airlines is the key that unlocks this. Emirates and Fly Dubai are both state-owned. They're not just transportation companies, they're instruments of national branding. The Arabic coffee they serve when you board, the date that comes with it, the almost aggressive hospitality, that's not a random corporate choice. That's the UAE deciding that your first physical encounter with Emirati culture will happen at 35,000 feet, and it'll feel like being welcomed into someone's home.
That's the part that clicked for me when I was reading her prompt. She noticed the service difference and thought, this must be what the place is like. And she's right, but not in the way most people assume. It's not that every Emirati lives in a gold-plated penthouse. It's that hospitality itself is a core national value, and the airline is the most efficient delivery mechanism they have.
Let's talk about Fly Dubai for a second, because she was unsure about the relationship. Yes, Fly Dubai is a budget subsidiary of Emirates, but budget in the Emirati sense isn't budget in the American sense. It's a low-cost carrier, but it's still state-owned, still code-shares extensively with Emirates, and still operates with a service philosophy that would embarrass most American full-service airlines. It's more like, imagine if Southwest had a baby with a Middle Eastern hospitality tradition.
Southwest with dates and Arabic coffee.
Southwest with dates and Arabic coffee and a genuine cultural mandate.
So let's get underneath the surface. Hannah asked directly about traditional Emirati culture, and she framed it as a question. Is it elevated Bedouin culture or something else entirely? What's the answer?
The answer is that elevated is the wrong word. It's Bedouin culture that's been formalized and institutionalized into a national identity. And there's a second half of the story that most outsiders miss entirely, which is the maritime piece. Before oil, the UAE economy wasn't built on desert nomadism. It was built on pearl diving and maritime trade. The desert Bedouin image is only half the story, and honestly, it's the half that photographs better for tourism campaigns.
The pearl diving economy. I didn't know that.
Most people don't. The coastal communities of what's now the UAE were some of the world's most important pearl producers for centuries. Whole towns would essentially empty out during the pearling season, the men living on boats for months at a time, diving without equipment, holding their breath for minutes at a stretch. It was brutal, dangerous work, and it was the economic foundation of the region until the Japanese figured out cultured pearls in the 1920s and destroyed the market overnight.
And then oil came along a few decades later and rewrote the whole story.
Right. So when the UAE was formed in 1971, the founding generation had a choice about what to preserve and how to present themselves. They chose to build a national identity around Bedouin values, hospitality, poetry, falconry, camel racing, but they also preserved the maritime heritage. The Zayed National Museum, which is opening this year, organizes Emirati heritage around four pillars: camels, pearls, weaponry, and poetry. That's not a random list. That's a deliberate statement about what the culture considers its foundations.
Camels, pearls, weaponry, and poetry. That's a museum exhibit I'd actually want to see.
It's genuinely well conceived. The poetry pillar in particular is something Westerners tend to underestimate. The UAE has UNESCO-listed intangible cultural heritage including Al-Azi, which is a form of war poetry, and Al-Razfa, which is a performance art that combines poetry, music, and synchronized movement. These aren't museum pieces. They're living traditions that get performed at weddings and national events. Camel racing is also UNESCO-listed, and it's huge. Modern camel racing involves robot jockeys now, which is a whole other conversation.
Robot jockeys.
Small, remote-controlled robots that sit on the camel's back and respond to commands from the owner who's driving alongside in a vehicle. They replaced child jockeys about 20 years ago, and it's become this fascinating blend of ancient tradition and modern engineering. The robots wear little jockey silks and everything.
The future is always weirder than the past. So the culture has these deep roots in Bedouin and maritime traditions, but it's also been deliberately curated into a national story. What about the food? Hannah asked specifically about food, and I know you've been reading about this.
Emirati cuisine is desert-adapted at its core, but it's been shaped by trade routes for centuries. The signature dish is makbuz, which is spiced rice with meat, usually lamb or chicken, cooked with a blend of spices that reflects the Indian Ocean trade. Cardamom, cinnamon, dried lime, saffron if you're being fancy. It's related to biryani and to the Saudi kabsa, but it's its own thing. Then there's lukumat, which are sweet dumplings drizzled with date syrup. They're essentially the national dessert. Crispy on the outside, soft on the inside, soaked in syrup.
I'm listening.
Dates and camel milk are central to the food culture in a way that's hard to overstate. Dates aren't just a snack, they're a hospitality ritual. You serve dates and Arabic coffee to every guest who enters your home. It's the first thing that happens. The coffee is poured from a dalla, which is that distinctive long-spouted pot, into tiny handleless cups. And there's a whole etiquette around how many cups you accept and how you signal you're done.
How do you signal you're done?
You wobble the cup, a little side-to-side shake. If you just hand it back without wobbling, they'll keep refilling it indefinitely. It's one of those cultural codes that's completely invisible to outsiders but governs every social interaction.
So, Hannah's question about whether it's like Bedouin culture in Israel, she's picking up on a real shared root. The Bedouin in the Negev and the Bedouin who became Emiratis come from the same broad cultural tradition. But the difference is that in Israel, Bedouin culture is a living subculture within a larger state. In the UAE, Bedouin heritage has been elevated into the national identity itself, formalized, museumified, taught in schools. It's not a subculture, it's the official culture.
And that creates a really interesting tension for young Emiratis. You're growing up in one of the most globalized cities on earth. Your Instagram looks like anyone's Instagram, but you're also expected to embody traditional values and know the poetry and understand the hospitality codes. The Khalij Times has this framing they use, 180 nations, one country. The idea is that the UAE is a cultural crossroads, not a melting pot. Nobody's expected to assimilate into Emirati culture, but the Emirati culture itself is supposed to remain distinct and protected at the center.
A crossroads, not a melting pot. That's a deliberate choice. Most countries that become immigration hubs either melt or fracture. The UAE is trying to do neither.
And the mechanism for that is, honestly, the 11% thing. When you're a small minority in your own country, you either disappear or you get very intentional about preservation. The UAE chose intentional preservation.
Let's talk about dress, because Hannah mentioned the men who dress like princes in the desert with expensive watches. That's a real thing she's observing, but there's more to it.
The kandura, which is the white robe for men, and the abaya, which is the black cloak for women, aren't costumes. They're climate-optimized garments that predate air conditioning by centuries. The kandura is loose. It's white to reflect heat. It creates a convection current that cools the body. It's practical engineering. The fact that it also looks elegant and distinctive is a bonus that's been amplified by contemporary tailoring and fabric quality. The expensive watches are a contemporary overlay. A kandura doesn't have pockets in the Western sense, so accessories become important. Watches, cufflinks, sunglasses, the phone you're holding. It's a modern status language layered on a traditional base.
And the women's abaya. Same principle?
Same principle, but with more variation in contemporary practice. The abaya is traditionally black, but modern designers in the Gulf have turned it into a fashion category. You'll see abayas with embroidery, with colored trim, with different cuts and fabrics. It's still modest dress, but there's a whole design language happening within those constraints.
So the image Hannah has from news coverage, fast cars, ridiculous skyscrapers, men in white robes with expensive watches, that's not fake. It's just the most visible layer of a much more complex picture. The question is whether any of the deeper picture is accessible during a stopover at Dubai International.
Let me answer the airport question directly because it's the most practical part of her prompt. Dubai International, DXB, is almost entirely internationalized. It's duty-free shopping, luxury brands, and food courts that could be in any major airport anywhere. The local character is minimal, but it's not zero. There are dedicated dates and Arabic coffee vendors in the terminal, and those are worth seeking out. Not because they're the best dates you'll ever eat, but because they're the one place where the airport remembers it's in a specific country.
So skip the generic Cinnabon and find the date vendor.
And the other thing to pay attention to is the service design on the flight itself. The Arabic coffee and date that comes shortly after boarding, that's not a snack. That's a cultural export. The way the cabin crew interacts with passengers, the whole choreography of the service, it's designed to communicate something about Emirati hospitality values. Pay attention to it as a cultural artifact, not just as an airline meal.
That's a useful reframe. Most people experience airline service as either good or bad, pleasant or annoying. But Hannah's instinct to read it as a cultural signal is right.
And the thing about the Emirates first class and business class lounges, which she might have access to depending on her ticket, is that they're even more deliberately cultural. The design references traditional architecture, the food includes Emirati dishes, the whole environment is curated to say you're in the Gulf, rather than you're in a generic luxury box. It's still a luxury box, but it's a luxury box with a specific address.
So, the airport answer is, mostly no, but the exceptions are real, and the flight itself is part of the answer. What about a future trip? If Hannah and Daniel go back to Dubai properly, what should they actually do to understand the place?
The Al Fahidi Historical District is the single best entry point. It's old Dubai, on the creek, and it's one of the few places where the pre-oil city is still visible. Narrow lanes, wind tower architecture, courtyards. It's walkable, it's quiet, and it houses the Sheikh Mohammed Center for Cultural Understanding, which runs meals in a traditional house where you sit on the floor, eat Emirati food, and ask whatever questions you want. The whole point of the center is to bridge the gap between visitors and locals.
Sit on the floor, eat makbuz, ask questions. That sounds good.
It's the opposite of the Dubai Mall experience. And then there's the Abra ride across Dubai Creek. Ain Abra is a traditional wooden boat, and for one dirham, which is about 27 cents, you cross the creek with the workers and the traders who've been doing that crossing for decades. It's not a tourist attraction. It's functioning public transit, and it gives you a view of the city that the skyscrapers can't.
One dirham. That's the cheapest cultural experience in the Gulf.
Probably. The camel market is farther out, but it's worth the trip if you want to see something that's been happening for centuries and is still a working market, not a reenactment. And the Zayed National Museum, once it's fully open, will be the institutional version of everything we've been talking about. Four pillars, camels, pearls, weaponry, poetry.
I want to circle back to something you said earlier about the pearl diving economy, because that changes how I think about the whole place. The skyscraper and shopping image makes Dubai seem like it was conjured out of nothing by oil money. But if there was a real maritime economy before oil, with its own culture and its own rhythms, then the contemporary city isn't just a fantasy. It's a transformation of something that was already there.
The pearl diving communities had their own music, their own poetry, their own social structures. The songs the divers sang on the boats, the Nama, are a whole genre of Emirati folk music that's now being preserved and studied. The pearl merchants built the first urban neighborhoods. The creek was a working port long before it was a tourist photo op. The continuity is real, it's just not obvious unless you know to look for it.
That's the thing Hannah's prompt keeps circling. She knows there's something underneath, she just doesn't know what it is or where to look. The food, the dress, the poetry, the pearl diving, the hospitality rituals, none of it's hidden exactly. It's just not where the tourist gaze naturally falls.
Because the tourist gaze is directed at the Burj Khalifa and the Dubai Mall and the Palm Jumeirah, which are real and impressive, but they're not the culture, they're the stage set. The culture is in the homes, in the majlis, which is the traditional sitting room where guests are received, in the poetry competitions that still draw huge audiences, in the camel races with their robot jockeys, in the way a stranger offers you coffee before they ask your name.
The majlis. Explain that.
The majlis is a reception room, traditionally separate from the rest of the house, often with its own entrance. It's where men gather to talk, where business gets done, where disputes get settled, where guests are welcomed. It's the social infrastructure of Emirati life. The physical space varies, cushions on the floor, carpets, the dala coffee pot always present, but the function is the same everywhere. It's where the culture reproduces itself through conversation.
When Emirates designs its first-class cabin to feel like a private reception space, with the warm lighting and the wood paneling and the coffee service, they're not just doing luxury, they're doing majlis.
They're doing majlis at scale. And most passengers experience it as just nice service, which is fine, but the design language has a specific cultural referent.
Hannah also asked about the contemporary versus traditional distinction. She said they might not be the same thing, and she's right. What's the contemporary Emirati culture that a young person in Dubai is actually living?
This is the part that's hardest for outsiders to see, because young Emiratis are navigating a genuine identity negotiation. They're a small minority in a hyper-global city. They grew up with the internet. Many of them studied abroad. They're on social media. They consume global culture. They speak English fluently. But they're also expected to maintain traditional values, to marry within the community, to uphold family honor, to know the poetry. It's not a contradiction exactly, but it's a tension.
A tension that probably produces interesting art.
There's a growing contemporary Emirati art scene, filmmakers, novelists, musicians who are working in that tension. The Louvre Abu Dhabi and the cultural district on Saadiyat Island are part of the government's investment in positioning the UAE as a cultural producer, not just a cultural consumer. Whether that works in the long run, whether it produces something distinctive or just more internationalized art with a local accent, I don't think anyone knows yet.
That's the open question, isn't it? The UAE has spent 50 years building a national identity out of Bedouin and maritime heritage, and now it's trying to figure out what comes next. The Zayed National Museum opening this year is part of that. The cultural district is part of that. But the outcome isn't determined.
The tension between preservation and globalization is genuine. The more successful Dubai is as a global city, the harder it's to maintain a distinct local culture. The 11% can't get smaller. The majlis can't compete with Instagram. Or maybe it can. Maybe the deliberate institutionalization of culture actually works as a preservation strategy. I don't know the answer to that.
Neither do I, but it's the right question to end on. Let me pull together the practical takeaways, because Hannah asked specific things, and we should answer them.
Go ahead.
For the stopover, skip the generic duty-free and find the dates in Arabic coffee vendors in the terminal. They're the one place where the airport remembers it's in a specific country. On the flight, pay attention to the service design as a cultural artifact. The coffee and dates after boarding. The whole hospitality choreography. That's the UAE projecting its values at altitude. It's not just an airline meal. It's a deliberate cultural export.
For a future trip, prioritize Al-Fahidi over the malls. The Sheikh Mohammed Center for Cultural Understanding does meals in a traditional house where you sit on the floor, eat makbuz and lukaimat, and ask whatever you want. The Abra across Dubai Creek costs 1 dirham and gives you a view of the city that the Burj Khalifa can't. The Zayed National Museum, once open, is the institutional version of everything we've discussed. And if you want to see something that's been happening for centuries, the camel market is still a working market, not a reenactment.
The mental model to carry is this. The UAE isn't hiding its culture. It's just that the culture isn't where tourists look. It's in the food, the poetry, the pearl diving history, the hospitality rituals, the majlis. The skyscrapers are real. The luxury is real, but they're the stage, not the play.
The thing Hannah got right from the beginning, just from looking at an airline website, is that hospitality isn't a marketing strategy here. It's identity. The UAE decided 55 years ago that it'd be known for welcoming strangers, and it's been ferociously consistent about that. The airline is just the most visible delivery mechanism.
One question I'm left with. As the Zayed National Museum opens and the cultural district expands, will the local character become more visible to visitors, or will the internationalization continue to dominate the surface? The UAE is betting on visibility. But the demographic math is relentless. 11%.
The demographic math is relentless, but the institutional commitment is also real. 50 years ago, there was no UAE, no national identity, no museums, no UNESCO listings. They built all of that from scratch. I wouldn't bet against them building the next phase, too.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. We'll be back soon.
See you then.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.